Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is a podcast that brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests such as NFL analyst Dominique Foxworth, insider and fantasy-focused football host Phil Yates, and ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr. If you like X's and O's, analytics, and probably too much dog talk, Lenny is a dog, then give the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, her dog, a listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Janae Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I normally say great state, but Commonwealth don't rhyme with nothing. Howard Bryant, what's going on, man?
What's up, bro? How you doing? Do you know your Commonwealths?
I do. If you tell me the full number, I'll give them all to you.
Oh.
I think it's five. Because Commonwealths are Massachusetts,
yep.
Kentucky,
yep.
Virginia,
yep.
Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Actually, that might be the four.
I think you're right. Although, yep.
Now, ask me what the difference is. I have no f-ing idea. None. Never come up.
And never will. You know, and I got to tell you something. I am disappointed that my 17-year-old has already begun to adopt the "what do I need to know that for" question. You know, dude, you're in the sponge stage right now. You're supposed to be absorbing everything just to know them, so you are remotely interesting to people. So people go, "Oh, he knows stuff." He's yes. Like, "What do I need to know that for?"
Well, I'd also make the point, and I don't know if this is something that concerns him. There are a number of reasons why I may not. I don't know the young man. Women do like it if you know stuff.
That's what I tried to tell him. I was
right,
like man.
It doesn't even really matter if the stuff is necessarily that relevant, right? If you
exactly.
can make it seem halfway important. In my travels, they seem to like it when you know stuff. They don't like it when you don't know stuff. I know that much.
They will remind you by telling all their friends, nice guy, he don't know anything. He kind of dumb.
Yes. I also didn't realize till I got much older the level of patience, for whatever it's worth. This kind of undercuts the first point. It is always very interesting to me that when I talk to a bright woman who tells me about the dude she was with who was not bright, because like I know for me that kind of like kryptonite. Like if I can't engage you in some measure of conversation, like it's not happening. But then I moved to Miami and I was hanging out with a woman and her boyfriend, and they didn't speak the same language. And I was like, man, people would just be finding ways.
You know what? That's that thing, right? When it clicks, even if the analytics are telling us we're not going to get along, but there's something there.
Yeah, got it. By the way, I'm looking up the difference between a state and a commonwealth, and I'm on the Merriam-Webster page. That is, what's the difference between a commonwealth and a state? And I've been trying to like read it while we talk, and normally I can do that kind of thing, but I don't really feel there's like there's no difference.
There is no difference. There is no difference.
Yeah. Not seeing it. But let's talk a little Commonwealth business here, man. And like, you grew up as a fan of the local teams, right?
I did. I will admit it. As a professional journalist, I will still admit that I was a child once.
Yeah. You know, it's a conflicting situation for you
it
guys
is.
Up there.
We still
like,
got it.
Like I rooted for the University of Texas. I've kind of had to let that narcotic go because it really wasn't paying. Not only was it not paying off, it was embarrassing me in these streets. And so like kind of had to like back up off of them. Okay. But I know what it's like to root for racially problematic teams. Honestly, none of us really have that much of a choice.
You got no choice. And you got no choice. And on top of having no choice, you keep an eye on it no matter what, right?
Yes.
And I told people all the time, when you become a professional, you don't stop being a fan. You become a different fan.
Yes.
You may end up hating what you cover, but for the most part, you just keep your eye on it. You grew up with this your whole life. So, yes, the lens through which I am this week is through the lens of Bill Belichick and Sean McDermott. Shout out to Sean McDermott. He's my star of the week. He really is my star of the week after what we saw on Monday night. And he's like, you know, can't be giving Bill Belichick that much credit. Actually, you have to give him a lot of credit.
Yo, and you know why I give Belichick credit? It is not even on, like, we're trying to galaxy brain this on Belichick in a way that misses the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is less about the brilliance of Bill Belichick than it is the fact that he is brilliant, yet willing to dumb it all the way down if that's what's required, right? Have I ever told you the story when I was in middle school and the trip to NASA?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So I have been known as the smart kid for basically my whole life, right? Like, and this is even going to school with white folks, right? Like this has been my bag. Everybody's known it. Like if you had to do some kind of group project in school, everybody trying to get on the wagon with me. That's what it's always been, right? Identified and known. So in eighth grade in earth science, the teacher did something that was actually like long range helpful for life, which is you'd have a lab partner in every 6 week period. It would change. And so it was a good thing for the smart kids, whether they realized it or not, because very often that meant that was the only time that you were working with people who were not, shall we say, on your same wavelength. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like you had to learn how to work with people who were not as smart as you. And the way that we partition people off in schools, a whole lot of smart people have no idea how to talk to people that they don't think are smart, right? They don't get it. So anyway, we would pair it up and everything else. And so I had a partner. I don't even remember her name. We didn't talk about very much. But what we had was a project where we were given some aluminum foil, some tape, and some straws. And we were supposed to make a raft out of that. And whoever's raft could hold the most weight would get to go to the Johnson Space Center for a field trip. Got it. So they give me this stuff. And man, my galaxy brain gets to work. I'm thinking about how to wrap this foil around the straws and how to make the shape to maximize all this stuff and to figure it out. And I'm cutting this and I'm cutting that. And it was almost like when you mess up trimming your mustache and you mess up a little here, you mess up a little there. And then next thing you know, you ain't got a mustache.
You got to cut the whole thing off.
Yeah, yeah. Like it was one of those things, right? Man, by the time I was done, I just had this little triangle and it couldn't even hold one weight because I had galaxy brain that whole thing. And the whole room is disappointed in me because I'm the one that's supposed to figure out how to make a goddamn luxury liner out of this foil and these straws. You know who won the contest?
Mm-hmm.
A dude who, and I'm not saying this to make a joke, dead serious. The dude that when you had to read out loud, like the kid next to him would basically whisper to him every word, right? Like he just couldn't do it, you know, but nobody wanted him to be embarrassed. And so, you know what his raft looked like? A rectangle with some straws on the side of it.
It looked like a raft.
That's what it looked. It didn't look like a raft. It looked like a box. Mm-hmm. Mine looked like a raft. I was trying to make it look like some kind of boat. His just looked like a box. And you know what? In that game on Monday night, all you needed was a box and some straws. That was the only thing. And Belichick was like, well, you know what? We're just going to pull out this box and these straws. Because sometimes the galaxy brain is unnecessary. You just need a box and some straws.
That's right. And especially in two things. One, football, right? Which basically is a barbaric, brutal, physical, simple game, right? I mean, the basis of football is me imposing my will on you. The strategies of it, that can get more complicated. But the bottom line is me pushing my way into your end zone and keeping you from pushing your way into mine, right? It's a really simple game when you think about it. It's not baseball. It's not the rest of, you know, it's football. It's a physical, straight up game. And then the second piece of that is when you add conditions to it. You got 45 mile an hour winds, right? You got sideways rain. You got sleet, snow, conditions. This is Bill Belichick going, we going back to 1920 and I'm loving this. I'm going to take on this challenge. I'm going to see if I can win like Fordham. I got Vince Lombardi in the seven blocks of granite right now. And we're going to win a 60-minute football game. And that's kind of fun because you probably get to do that once or twice every 15 or 20 years in terms of conditions.
Look, there's something about slobber knocker football. Like, in the end, people have to be honest, right?
Yep.
The thing that makes football interesting is the violence, right?
That's like, right.
That is what makes this into a compelling game. Now, was there more violence than was optimal 30, 40 years ago? Probably, right? Like, there were people who existed just to hurt you. That was the only value that they had to provide to a football team, right? We don't necessarily need to be in that place. But in the end, lining up, I was talking to Spencer about this the other day, about, you know, college football teams and who you hire or whatever. And I'm like, look, I don't care who you are. As long as you're not running the wishbone, if you tell fans we're going to run the ball for 250 yards a game, everybody's going to be on board. Maybe
right.
You do it with some crazy spread offense or whatever it is, but everybody loves the idea that we just going to lean on y'all and run on y'all, and there ain't going to be nothing you can do about it. And the thing for the Bills was, there was something they could do about it. They didn't play badly against the run, but Belichick is like, this is all we going to do. Sean McDermott, on the other side, got a problem, which is he wants to run the ball all the time, and his offensive coordinator is like, dude, we're no good at that.
We're not that team.
We don't have the personnel to do that thing. Like, Brian Daboll, at the end of last year, with everything he did with Josh Allen, is people talking about getting him a head coaching job and everything else. He might wind up getting fired at the end of this year because his coach wants him to do stuff that they're not actually capable of doing. But damn, Belichick looked at the wind and was like, we're not going to throw it all. The Bills looked at the wind and said, we're going to throw the ball 30 times. And I get it. Josh Allen, great, big, strong. He can get the ball through the wind.
Yeah, but he ain't better than Mother Nature.
No.
And that's the reason why Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick. You know, there's a reason why, like, when you think about where Belichick comes from, think about all the different situations that man has seen on a football field for his entire life. I mean, there's a reason why when you're watching those classic 49er Giants game, which is why I think they are my favorite rivalry game in history, because you had the super sleek, high tech Bill Walsh dropping 35 on everybody. And when they did beat the Giants, they beat them 16-14. Why? Because those two styles make fights, right? Because Bill Belichick, at the end of the day, knows what football is. If I can win a football game throwing the ball three times and completing two passes, that's what football had to be on that night.
Well, people also need to know that football is going to go back in that direction.
It absolutely is.
It's not going to go back to like three passes, like, just to be clear. But what is going to happen is, and this is the thing they did last year in New England, they were running out of the eye so
much. Cam Newton. Mm-hmm.
Nobody's out here getting linebackers whose job it is to stop the run.
Yep.
Therefore, you're going to have these little bitty linebackers out here. Not even little bitty, but you know what I mean? But these guys that are there to cover and these nickelbacks, and somebody's response to that is going to be, oh, we're just going to run the ball on you more and more and more. Like, that's going to be the competitive move.
There's a 10-year-old fullback right now who's like, I got a future that I never thought I had before.
Yo, and that's the thing, man. The biggest loser in this whole new era that we've been talking about is the 6'1", 245-pound white man.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a place for you in the NFL, buddy.
It's coming back, though.
Yeah. It's going to come back because it's just going to be, that's how the game theory works on this, is that everybody's loading up to stop this thing. So now we're going to stop the other one.
It's called counter-programming, and it happens all the time. And it always happens when they get too smart for themselves, right? When they start thinking about this in a way that is far more complicated than it needs to be, right? I mean, and that's one of the things. Okay, if you want to sit there and have an offense that suddenly is no longer going to use fullbacks or running backs, and you're going to use your running back as a wide receiver, okay, then we're going to jam you and we're going to hit you real hard up close. And we're going to disrupt your timing, which is why Walsh Parcells was so genius. That's why it was so much fun to watch. Whose game is going to win? I remember when I was covering the Super Bowl back in 95, Chargers 49ers. I remember doing an interview with George Seifert, and he was telling me about how when they were both coordinators with the Niners, he and Mike Holmgren used to just sit there in the office and draw plays about whether my play could stop your play. They would just sit there and talk about, well, here's why mine's going to work and here's why yours isn't going to work. And they would just talk about iron sharpening iron. These dudes are doing this for sport. And these are two of the greatest coaches of all time, right? In terms of their side of the ball. And so when you're Belichick, What I thought was great on that, and you talk about the Boston mentality up here, it was like, got you again, right? Everybody up here was like, got you again, you know? Okay, Sean McDermott, you look great at the podium. Talking about, let's not give him too much credit. Well, they are 37-6 against the Bills since Bill Belichick took over, and 6-2 against you, Sean McDermott. So there's that.
But the thing about this Patriots team.
And a road win, by the way, yeah, with a rookie.
The thing about this Patriots team, I have no idea who plays for them. Like, outside of the quarterback, I really don't know who plays for the Patriots. Like, I was thinking about this team in comparison to their 2001 team.
That's a great comp.
Yeah, but I knew who the guys were that played on that team, right? Like, I knew who Teddy Bruschi was. I knew who Willie McGinnis was, because the Patriots were still at a point where they were getting, like, fairly decent draft picks, right?
Well, that's
like,
right.
I knew who Ty Law was. I knew people on that
team. Well, that team had already been to the Super Bowl.
Right, but that was 5 years before. Like, even then, you get, like, a bit of a rotation out. But, like, we knew who players were on that team. I don't know who anybody is, really, that plays on this team. And they, right now, are the best team in the AFC. And they are doing this with the rookie quarterback. And see, he's the guy that we know who he is. And we, as a media, just can't help ourselves. We don't have another rookie quarterback right now to truly talk about. Because for the first time in a while, all of them seem to stink other than Mac Jones, right? Like normally we get like a one or two. We're not getting that now.
This is the reason why, if we can just kind of not digress, but continue on this. This is the reason why, when people were sort of losing their minds about the Belichick-Brady split, it's like, do you understand competition and professional growth? Like, there had to be a piece of Bill Belichick who was like, it's going to be kind of fun to rebuild this one more time. Let me show y'all what I know. Let me show you what I can do. You know, he was like Weave in prison, you know, remember who I am. You know what I mean? I mean, I know you're talking about Disney, but remember who I am. And you know, there has to be a part of Belichick, even Cam last year, because that setup was very similar to what we're looking at right now. Cam just couldn't move, and he had COVID, and the rest of it just sort of fell apart. But they had Buffalo last year up there, and Cam fumbled the ball, and that was that. So I think that the football genius in Belichick is like, I am totally willing to run this back right now. And imagine what they'll say about me if I can raise a Lombardi or even just win the conference with this.
Yeah. And they haven't had great defenses, really. Not any kind of consistent. They had a great defense in Brady's last season. But other than that, like, great defense wasn't really the program. They got a great defense here. But, dude, how hyped up are y'all up there about Matt Corkle Jones?
Well, one, you always have to factor in the because we're in Massachusetts, it's Boston, so of course there's the Mac Jones anti-Cam whiteness factor that you've got to throw in there somewhere. But I think the biggest thing in there that people are really excited about with Mac Jones is the fact that he is reminding people of the certain age what it was like when you were an underdog and what it was like figuring it out. And it does remind you a little bit of 2001, 2002, where Brady was completely managed at all times. You know, he takes no risks at all. He's being lauded for his decision-making. In other words, don't blow the game, but we're going to ask you to make plays when you need to make plays. Something sort of interesting about that. What I'm looking forward to seeing, like, the real Mac Jones moment, okay, is going to come when the shit falls apart. You know, you get two turnovers in the first half, you're down 21-3 or something, and now you can't run the ball 75 times in a row. Now you're going to have to make a few plays. And when that happens, if he can come through that moment and this goes somewhere, people here are going to do cartwheels. They're going to lose their mind.
Let me tell you right now, as of this moment, he can't do them things that are being discussed in his moment.
Well, I don't think
he cannot. Like, that's the thing that is interesting to watch about this, because, again, the way our media machine works, he is our rookie quarterback. We need, you know, we need explanations. We need to put things. We need to make stories. Everything else. Like, one, Mac Jones, not an underdog story, right? Like, this
that's
dude was
right.
A four-star recruit. And he went to Alabama, and when it came time for him to play, he played. Like, he always looked like a dude that was ready to play at that level. Now, he's a dink and dunk dude, and that's what he does right now well. So you do the things that, you know, that you have out there that you do well. But he just a dude right now, as of this moment. Like, he's not good.
And so is Brady.
Yeah, right. He's not, here's the thing, he's not bad, but he's not good. Like, the reason I don't think the Patriots got any chance to go to a Super Bowl, I'd still take Buffalo over them. I'd still take Kansas City over them. I'd still take Baltimore over them, even with Lamar not playing well because of who the three quarterbacks are, right? But, man, let me tell you, watching this Patriots thing as it goes has actually, for me, been a little charming. Like, I've never hated the Patriots. Like, the thing I find interesting about the Patriots is, you know, people getting on that cheating and everything else, and I don't know, I guess. Like, I would enjoy their cheating stuff more if they leaned into it. Like, if it was the Raiders, they would have leaned into it. It would have been part of the legend. Like, the Patriots don't feel like an outlaw franchise. They just be feeling like they get away with shit, right? Yep. But, like, I've never had, like, a real emotional feeling about them. But I do think there's something interesting about the fact that Brady gets out of there and Belichick really does come out here with 53 dudes that he picked up in the back of his truck at the Home Depot on the way to practice. And he's like, by Sunday, they'll be an NFL team.
And by Thanksgiving, they'll be a threat. And that's the reason why I think this is interesting, right? And when I say underdog, Mac Jones isn't the underdog, but the Patriots are the underdog because they're supposed to be dead right now, right? If we're following along the narrative, you lose your superstar quarterback, the dynasty's over. It's done. It's finished. And it may very well be finished, right? What they're giving you this year is an idea that he can rebuild a franchise. Let's not forget that for everything that we've talked about with Bill Belichick over these years of genius, whatever, nobody ever said he was a good GM. Nobody's ever said that, you know, in fact, people have said he's a bad GM and that he's really not great at acquiring players. And so for him, this might be one of his most fun years in terms of putting something together because the other guy won a championship without him. Now, I don't know how much they put into that. I don't know how real that is. I don't know what that relationship is. But just from a competitive standpoint, and from a not just a competitive standpoint, but just from a growth standpoint, you need to do something new. Everybody needs to reinvent. Everybody needs to start over. And there is something, and I'm sure there are people listening to this going, there's nothing charming about the New England Patriots. And certainly there's nothing charming about the fan base because the fan base did lean into that Raider stuff, you know, with the they hate us because they ain't us t-shirts, right? And so there is that piece of obnoxiousness that the New England sports fan has regardless of the sport. But there is something about that team when you go back and you look at them, they do feel like 2001. They do feel like 2002. They feel like a team that is winning on scheme, that is winning on heart. They're one of those teams, those weird-ass football teams that you look at them and you go, they're not that good. But then again, they've got a plus 800 turnover ratio and that changes the sport, right? I mean, football can be broken down to two things, injuries and turnovers. Right? Plus penalty. Injury plus turnover plus penalty equals winning team. If you win those battles, chances are you'll be pretty good.
Ever give you my Dr. Dre, Bill Belichick comparison/analogy?
I don't think so.
One of the more interesting things about Dr. Dre as producer is all these people that he has done classic material with who really ain't been worth a damn without him, right? Dre go out here, remember on the 2001 album, the dude Hitman? Mm-hmm. He has Hitman all over 2001. 2001 sold 7 million copies or something ridiculous like that. Hitman's raps are all over that album. Never heard from Hitman again. I can go and you can think of some other people in your mind. People that show up on a Dre track and somehow this magically works, but then they get away from Dre and it just don't go. Remember how long it took Snoop to figure out how to rap without Dre? It took 2-3 albums before he could get it back because Dre could see something in somebody and know exactly what this thing is that he wants this rapper to do on this particular song, the exact tone of voice, whatever it is, and he can make it into something that works on a Dr. Dre track that apparently you can't figure out how to make work nowhere else. And that is Bill Belichick, right?
Yep.
Like, honestly, I think if Bill Belichick had his way, he would never have a first round pick. Because he's like, look, man, I'm just out here guessing and figuring out these very particular things, right? If you could give Bill Belichick, he got as much use for a first round pick. He'd honestly probably prefer 8 7th round picks. because he just is likely to find that one guy that does that one thing that he needs. Like, that's where the galaxy brain part comes in. All these dudes that leave as free agents and look like they boo-boo and then come back and suddenly look like Patriots. Like, what's your man's name? Jamie Collins? Yep. You know, like those type of dudes.
Hightower and the rest of them. It's like, hey, they're back.
Kyle Van Noy, right back.
They fit this. I mean, so they can either play for Belichick or they can go down there and play for Mike Vrabel because it's the same system in a lot of ways, right?
But Vrabel ain't going to make it work. Like, Brian Flores is basically running the same system. And Kyle Van Noy brought it right back.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's because he did not like Brian Flores, because all those Belichick assistants got this little problem that the Bobby Knight assistants used to have.
They all think they're Bill Belichick.
Yeah, you can't. Mm-hmm. He can act like that.
You can't.
You can't act like that. They don't believe in you.
Well, and it's true. I remember my boy Sean Springs told me a classic Belichick story one time when he was last year when he was with the Patriots. And he was telling me about the time he was on goal line. They were at Miami and he broke scheme using his instincts and broke up a play at the goal line and got benched. And he was like, why am I sitting on a bench? And he said, Bill would rather lose with Bill's scheme than win with yours. First round is like, I know how to play this game. Seventh round is like, yes, coach. Right? Yes, coach. Sean Springs is like, I am the highest drafted defensive back in history. Right?
He was the highest drafted corner.
Corner, yes. Corner in history. You know, defensive back. Has there been a safety drafted higher than three?
Eric Turner was drafted number two.
Eric Turner, yeah. Yeah, he's the highest drafted cornerback. He used to say that in the locker room all the time. He'd been in the league 8 years and still said it. And he was like, I made a play. You would have thought that the coach would have come over and be like, hey, man, way to use them instincts. He's like, nah, you broke scheme. But if I didn't break scheme, we would have given up a touchdown. Bill don't care.
I would like to take a moment, by the way, to say that Sean Springs is running a game on people with that one right there, because he was the number three pick in the draft at corner. He was not the first corner to ever be taken at number three in the draft. And the Falcons once took a corner at number three in the draft named Bruce Pickens. Bruce Pickens played all of 5 years in the NBA, and it was not because he suffered a catastrophic injury. It was simply because he was not a good football player. You got to be the corner on the, although I imagine being a rookie and being the corner on the other side of Deion, that has got to be a baptism by fire.
That's got to hurt.
Yeah, Sean Springs, I see through you. Now, Belichick and the whole thing that they're running right now is so boring and so interesting, like, all at one time. What's up with your basketball team up there?
I was talking to my boy last night, and I was like, what is the purpose of having Ime Udoka as your coach if you never see Nia Long?
I saw her and the kids at a game.
I missed that game.
I mean, she ain't about to be up there all the time, you know, but I saw her at an early game.
Man, they should be running like Love Jones, like on 851, man, you know, on NBC Sports. I want to see that again, right? I think that they are not a very good team. I am extremely concerned as my Celtic people panic that they've kind of blown it. I don't know. I mean, they're an average team. They were an average team last year. I mean, let's just put it this way. They were one quarter away from going to the finals in game seven against the Cavaliers a few years ago. And everything since, and that was with Kyrie on the bench, or not even on the in the building. And everything since, I just really don't know what to make of them. I just feel like Jason Tatum's a great player. I mean, I'm not sure how you can make a living when your signature shot is a turnaround 25-footer. But I've made the argument that Jason Tatum has the highest degree of difficulty per shot of any star player in the league. He don't make it easy on himself. And it, maybe it's that elongated delivery or whatever, but, you know, that three settling, the whole thing. And I'm looking at them and Jaylen Brown's not playing. And I'm like, this team is supposed to be a perennial and they're not good. They're not, they're an average basketball team. And I had a moment last night, Bo, because it's Celtics Lakers is always supposed to fire you up if you're from New England, right? It's always, no matter what it is, no matter what the records, when it's Celtics Lakers, you feel something. I felt nothing last night. It wasn't because they lost, because when I was watching the game, they were winning. It wasn't that. It was the fact that in the second quarter of the game, you had four Hall of Famers on the court for the Lakers. I did, however, before I go on, I will say that I like the fact that the Lakers and the Celtics actually wore their traditional uniforms. I was like, that's kind of fun to see. But you had Dwight Howard, your Hall of Famer, who is a Hall of Famer, but the Hall of Famer people don't think is a Hall of Famer. You had LeBron James, you had Carmelo Anthony, and you had Russell Westbrook all on the court wearing the gold for the Lakers. And none of them felt like Lakers. And then I'm watching on the other hand, I'm like, why is Dennis Schroeder wearing number 71 for the Boston Celtics? What am I looking at right now?
Well, you know why he's wearing number 71, because y'all have retired half of 100 numbers.
Exactly. There are no numbers left in the city of Boston. It is true. There's nothing left. But it just, I understand that we're moving into a new place. It's hard to transition to that place. That place where, and I blame LeBron James for it. It's his new era. It is the fact that the teams and the players, there is no spear of lightning anymore. I mean, how many players, there's maybe only one team that I can really think of. And it's Steph and Clay, where you look at them and you go, those are Warriors. Everybody else, they're basketball players who play for a certain team today and very well may play for several more teams tomorrow and the years following. And I was talking to my boy last night about this. And I said, when you think of LeBron James, do you think of LeBron James as a Laker, a Heat, a Cavalier, or just an individual who dominated his time? And he was like, I still see him as a Cavalier. And I said, I see him as singular. I don't associate LeBron James really with any team. I think it's more Cleveland because he played for them twice, but I just view him as a guy who went to 8 straight finals and he was the guy that whatever team he was on, they were the favorite.
Yeah, I feel like, I think I view him as a Cavalier. Like, I view his time with the Heat as a sabbatical.
Same.
Like, the Heat as a franchise have a personality and LeBron James honestly doesn't fit it.
Those were his best years, though.
That's what I was about to get to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go.
Yeah. It just so happens that it's one of the greatest four-year periods that anybody has had as a basketball player. Like, the best four for him, honestly, are probably the last year in Cleveland plus the first three in Miami, right? Those years he made first-team all-defense, those are the best years of LeBron James that we wound up with. But he does not really fit the personality of what the Heat are. And it's an interesting thing because LeBron's teams, and I guess the Heat did to a degree, like they retained the toughness, but they did kind of take on a bit of the LeBron personality when it comes. But I don't feel like it's one of those things where LeBron shows up, it's a new sheriff in town, and we're going to do things different now because LeBron's here. Like, it's interesting in that way. But you're right with the Lakers. Everybody that's on that team right now does just feel like they're stopping through. And even though that's a team that has often felt like dudes were stopping through, I don't think it's felt like that before.
I think that when you look at the signature player, the Lakers have always had a signature player per era. They don't have one now. I mean, even though they have LeBron James, it feels like him going there was much more a personal business decision than it was, I want to be a Los Angeles Laker. I want to be part of this pantheon. And so when you look at them, I still go back to when Dwight Howard went to the Lakers for the first time. That was the breach. That was the beginning of the end of the Lakers as we knew them in terms of they got the superstar player. I mean, they got everybody. I mean, think about who came to the Lakers since the 1960s, right? They are the premier franchise, and I hate to betray my region in the 617, but they are the premier franchise post-1970 in the NBA.
Yeah, no question.
There's no doubt about it. It's their league. Because they've got all the, especially in a free agent world, they've got all of the advantages. And so, but Dwight was the one guy who came there and it didn't happen and left voluntarily. And so suddenly that took away a lot of the Laker mystique. I thought that Kawhi Leonard, when he was with San Antonio, that he was going to continue on that spear of lightning thing with Pop, you know, from Duncan, Ginobili, et cetera. And he was the next in line. Didn't work out that way. I mean, the only place where you really, really see it is with Kerr and Curry. And I think that's where the league is going. And I think that's where the players are going, because I think the players don't identify. I wonder what that's going to do for the league itself. Like, if the teams really, truly don't matter, they're already doing it with the uniforms. You can't tell what color any of the teams, you know, you don't know. They've all got 25 uniforms anyway. And so, and it's not a get off my lawn thing. It is more of a, can this league really maintain the sort of connection and rivalry when the players are so much more important than the franchises?
Yeah, because that the NBA has to figure out how to make the regular season interesting again, right? And so to me, this is like nobody's fault per se. I think this kind of happened in baseball in a different season, but in the same way. The 2016 Warriors ruined the NBA regular season.
Oh, by winning every game?
Think about this. They won 73 games and then blew that 3-1 lead. But don't forget, every step of the way of them getting to 73 games, we cared. That's we were right. in on it. Kobe's last game was on ESPN2 because they were breaking the record, the Warriors, on ESPN. Like, it was a huge thing. The Suns, are they still on this crazy winning streak? Like, I looked up when they played the Warriors, and they were on a 16-game winning streak, and I had no idea because the regular season. So how do you keep people interested in the regular season? Well, one way you do that is through rivalry, for example, right? Like, 100%. That's the thing, having games that people look forward to seeing because it's like, oh, it's the first time these two teams are playing and having that kind of investment in it.
If you got no circle games, if you got no games in the calendar, you circle.
No, or do. No. No, and that's where the NBA has gotten now with the, and I don't blame the load management thing as much as people do, because that really applies to very few players. You do have more injuries, you know, and those things kind of coming up. So, like, I'm not pretending as though that was a zero factor, but I just think the biggest thing is people talk that the playoffs only matter thing so much that, like, the idea of enjoying a regular season game, because look, these dudes are still out here playing hard. Yeah. Like, it's not like cats are mailing it in. There's too many of these three-pointers and these wild fluctuations in score, everything
like
else.
Like that stupid game last night?
Yeah.
With the Nets and the Mavericks?
But they got to figure out how to make people care about that. I want to touch on something right fast, though. You talk about the Lakers having all the advantages, okay? I don't know when exactly Ime Udoka met Nia Long. I do not. But that man played for the Lakers in 2004 and played four games with the Lakers. My assumption had always been, it's that good to be a Laker that Ime Udoka could be dating Nia Long for like 15 years and we had no idea or whatever it is, right? Like, that was the way I saw it. If he met her while he played for the Lakers for four games.
You were here for 96 hours and that's what you came away with?
This is why the Lakers got 17 championships.
That's
like
right.
That right there. I play for the Lakers might go that far for you.
It Things might worked out well you, for you.
That right there. Ime Udoka, boom, played for the Lakers. I mean, dude, think about this. I looked him up while we were doing this. So he played at the University of San Francisco, and then he went to Portland State, and then he played overseas. He had a couple seasons where he, like, actually played, like, 60-something games or whatever. But he just pop up here, play a little bit there, whatever. Right now, that man, the coach of the Boston Celtics, and, like, we publicly associate him with Nia Long. He made the most of every opportunity that was ever presented to him. That is one resourceful gentleman.
We're all winners, right? Take advantage. I mean, this is the interesting piece of all this, right? And I thought that Miami was going to be in that same category because another glamour city, right? I mean, these are the places that you want to go. If you're a 25-year-old, where do you want to be, right? You want to play in Buffalo, right? I mean, do you want to play in, I mean, not even that, just any city. Like, do you want to play in Cleveland? Do you want to play in Boston? Right? You're going to want to be in Miami. You're going to want to be in Phoenix. You're going to want to be in L.A.
In Phoenix? You 25 years old? You want to be in Phoenix?
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, I like a Grand Slam breakfast as much as the next man, but I don't really.
All I'm talking about is that when post-Barkley, Phoenix became a destination.
Yeah, right. Phoenix became a destination.
Exactly. For the players.
Yeah, for like early 30s, like at the Charles Barkley point in their career.
Yes.
Yeah, which, yeah.
Yes. And also just like Florida, they didn't want to pay any taxes. There were all kinds of advantages for being down there. If you're a 25-year-old black man, that being unless you're just hanging out on Arizona State's campus, you don't really want to be down there. But there are certain cities, those warm weather cities were becoming destinations. It's fascinating to me that one of the cities that is finally back in sort of, I don't know if finally is the word, but they're kind of back is Chicago. You would think that Chicago and New York in a free agent time would be far more attractive than they've been.
Yeah, but just you wait. The Knicks are going to, I don't know who it's going to be, right? I think it will eventually be Damian Lillard, but, and I don't know how that's going to work because he seems to be on the decline, but the Knicks are going to get one.
Yep.
Last year opened some eyes up for some people, and I think people believe now they actually have like a credible operation that's up there. the Knicks are going to get one. And I've been living in this city now, I guess, for almost 4.5 years. And I've been here long enough to tell you, when they get one,
it's
going to be cracking.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If Kevin Durant had gone to the Knicks, that's not a judgment of him. I'm just telling you right now, I can't explain to you what a phenomenon it would be. Like, if he's doing the things that he's been doing, but he was doing them for the Knicks, it would be completely different the way this city receives it.
I'm thinking about Bill Belichick right now, right? And the conversation that we just had about Belichick. I was talking to my boy the other day, big New York fan, big New Yorker dude. And he's like, Kevin Durant has got to be enraged at his situation right now. He's only here for Kyrie. He's like, why? How many days is he saying to himself, why am I here? But now I'm thinking about what we've been talking about, Bill Belichick. And I'm thinking, after watching last night's game, and I'm thinking, is there a part of Durant who's like, I'm going to take this challenge. I will take this challenge and I will lead it. James Harden and I can lead this team to a championship with or without you, Kyrie Irving. And watching the way those two have been closing games lately, and they're what now, 6-1 in games decided by 5 points or less, that maybe Kevin Durant has decided that this is going to be my masterpiece. Although he is playing 36 minutes a game, can you sustain that till April?
Yo, think about this. Manuel Acho said this last year. When
are you really quoting Emmanuel Acho?
No. Look, I am. But the fact that he's Acho was part of the point that I was going to make here. He said something that I believe if anybody else had said it, people would have understood better, which was last year where he was like, this is a chance for Kevin Durant to prove something because he's never been that guy by himself in a situation like that. And that is the truth. Through no fault of his own, he's always been able to look to his right or look to his left and see a Hall of Fame caliber player, right? And
which he can still do today.
Right. He still do. But still, with Harden last year with the bad hamstring, and Harden now not quite being the player that we have seen him be, is different. And so when you start talking about challenges that Kevin Durant's looking at or embarking upon, this is definitely one in a way that simply hadn't been required of him. It's not because he wasn't good enough to do it, or I'm like, he wasn't capable, or he has to show that he's capable, but it is different. And I could imagine for him that there's something to relish about the fact that this is different. And like, okay, I'm going to be the dude to get this done. However, it still ain't what he signed up for. And like, James Harden seems to be the one most frustrated. Like, James Harden is the one that with the Kyrie stuff, you know, nothing's going to change, right? Like you would see him in interviews have to stop, rewind. Not going to say that.
That's right. And because everybody knows, and that's the New York thing that you're talking about. I'm not going to say that the Brooklyn Nets are the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, but these are the Knicks. And those Nets.
That's more accurate. And in fact, I would say, where the Angels have an advantage over the Nets is the Angels truly have their own distinct real estate.
That's right.
Right? Like Orange County, the idea that they wanted to call that the Los Angeles anything, I didn't understand until I lived out there. Like, oh, Orange County is a completely different place.
It's a totally different place.
Those two team cities work if the other team has its own real estate. That's why Chicago baseball works. Clear, distinct real estate.
Yeah, north side, south side.
Basketball and hockey and even football. Clear real estate, you know, on who belongs to whom. Like, that's out there. The Nets, like, they went and set up in Brooklyn. Brooklyn already had a team. The Knicks, like, you might be able to get this for the new Brooklyn. Like, I'll tell you, like, when we've been interviewing people for that HBO show, a lot of Nets fans who live in Brooklyn.
Who live in Brooklyn.
Not from Brooklyn. live in Brooklyn. You know what
that's
I mean?
Right.
Like, those people wind up being there. So, no, you are off broad. Like, once the Clippers stopped being embarrassing like 10 years ago, you go to a Lakers game to go to a Lakers game. You go to a Clippers game to watch a basketball game.
That's right.
And that's still what the Nets are, even with Kevin Durant, even with those guys there. You go there because you can watch a basketball game for affordable prices.
And you can get to go see some players, right? I mean, how many times was it that you would go to a game to see the road team, right?
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. You're going just to see, like, what do you do? You want to go see a basketball game? LeBron's first year with the Heat. I saw him at the Staples Center against the Clippers. That's what, you know, and the Clippers won, by the way. Good for them. But yeah, I'm just going to go see a basketball game. Hey, there's a basketball game tonight. That's what the Clippers are. Another show. They're like another show in Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, okay, cool. There's another concert we can go check out. we'll go see the Clipper show. That's what it is. Who's guest starring on the Clipper show tonight? The Trailblazers? Oh, yeah, I like them.
That's right. See, and there's nothing you can do about that. When you start thinking about that, you are relying on the Brooklyn transplant hipster who thinks it's cool because they live in Park Slope and then they're going to go to Barclays. You're relying on them staying there and creating roots there. And that's not what happens. Because more than likely, they've already created the team. Maybe their kids are going to care about it, but their kids are leaving, right? So the roots of where you're at, if you don't have them, then even the success of your current team is not going to translate. Like my boy was asking me the other day about the Nets. He's like, how are we going to measure success for the Brooklyn Nets? Because they haven't been to a finals yet with this current group. The superstar that they brought there isn't even on the court. You've got Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant in your building. Have you created roots? But once those guys are gone, what have you? I said, you're still the Nets, right? I mean, you're just the Nets. And that's not to shade the Nets. It's to say, here's how difficult it is to create that sort of lasting legacy real estate. It's really, really, that's what they call them, signature franchises. It's really, really hard to have them. You know, I mean, it's impossible. In a lot of ways, it's impossible. Some teams, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, even Philadelphia, you look at Philadelphia's record, the 76ers aren't anywhere near the team we think they are, right? They've got that legendary name because of Wilt Chamberlain and Dr. J and the whole thing and Iverson. But on balance, the Philadelphia 76ers are not a dominant franchise in Syracuse Nationals.
The Warriors hightailed it out. And they're like, okay, I guess we'll come down. Like, imagine that. You in Rochester, you get the news. They left Philly.
They left.
Word? I'll be there in half an hour. Somebody called Mayflower.
Yeah, man. And it reminds me of when you and I didn't really talk about it that much, but when the NBA put their 75 out there, it was like, look, the reason why those lists were so tilted toward the old days was because that was when you were pouring the concrete of the league. You care about the league because of that. You know, like when we were kids, it was like, oh, like people talk about MLS right now, right? Like it's completely non-existent, or NWSL or whatever other sort of minor league rival team that you're trying to come up with. Imagine being a basketball fan in 1950 when you're talking about Fort Wayne and since, you know, in these franchises, you know, like, where are your teams? You know what I mean? It was like you had to build this into something. And by building it into something that you have now, you've got pillars. You've got Los Angeles, you've got Boston, you've got whatever. But for the most part, circling this whole thing back, there's a whole lot of real estate in the NBA that doesn't really have a whole lot of value.
They in the NHL have more bad real estate relative. Like baseball, you look at it. Baseball doesn't really have a lot of bad real estate.
Yeah.
And in the places where they do have bad real estate, like other than Tampa, people do like care about the team. You know what I mean? The NBA, they out here in Sacramento. You know, they in Oklahoma City. They in Memphis. They in New Orleans. And I know why they're going to be there, but still, that's not good real estate. Orlando, that ain't really good real estate. No, they have a lot of, they got a lot of questionable real estate in the NBA. Salt Lake City, it's not good real estate. I'm sure you guys love your teams.
And in 2021, can you sell a professional athlete on the history of the Boston Celtics? You can't.
Well, they did sell one.
Al Horford?
Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie, well, he got traded, though.
Yeah, he did, but still.
He did engineer that.
And then he didn't. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Howard Bryant, Metalog Media. Check him out at ESPN. Check him out all over this place. And maybe he'll send you a video of Ralph Sampson fighting Gary Seating like he sent to me the other day for literally no reason.
I was fouled and I had to protect myself.
Man, you hate Ralph Sampson so much. It's amazing how much you hate Ralph Sampson. And I don't know if anything can possibly age you more than in the year 2021 still having a passionate opinion about Ralph Sampson.
I'm fine wine, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week. Gabe Bassan and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.